The makers of the following podcast and other persons associated with the podcast do not endorse and or bear any liability for any content, statements, views, ideas or opinions expressed in this podcast by the individual participants, nor for any issue arising in connection therewith. The podcast may contain strong language and ideas or concepts that may or may not be suitable for young children. Listener's discretion is advised.
Break those norms.
Catch the music.
Drag queen, drag queen, drag queen, and then dragging, dragging, dragging.
For the one, the only.
हाँ मुझे drag करना है तो
थोड़ा traditional होना चाहिए.
हम सब performers हैं.
Waiting to blossom.
I use a word like drag artist.
That will create change.
Come and join me.
This beautiful thing which is called drag.
Yeah, that's drag for you.
Well, our thrilling ride continues as far as in drag is concerned. We have another chapter unfolding in front of our eyes today of, well, to be honest, technically right, would be years. And we have somebody with us who has been doing something very interesting and very nurturing. And why it's so important in this story of ours, which is the story of drag, is that this is actually going to open up our eyes to a whole new, different understanding in terms of this beautiful, beautiful culture of drag. So please put your hands together. Ladies and gentlemen, for the one and the only, Abhishek Singhania, a.k.a. Actually, I would like you to say that.
Gia La Beja, from the house of La Beja.
Well done. Welcome to the show, Abhishek. And so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Abhishek, शुरुआत से शुरू करते हैं. What was it like growing up and when did you first learn about drag?
Oh, well, I think it's taken me some time to, you know, understand what's going on with me. It's taken me a long time to accept myself fully. But yeah, so right now I'm at a point that I'm, I think, very comfortable in my own skin.
Sure, sure.
The turning point was when I really came out to my parents. I think after that day, I was just done. I was like, okay, now I just don't care.
Nice.
And touch wood, it's been nice. They've been beautiful.
Abhishek, like you said a little while back, ke aapko samay laga to fully understand in terms of who Abhishek as a person is. Mm. During that phase, did you feel that you were naturally kind of drawn towards the idea of drag?
Of course, I was drawn to the idea of drag naturally, not even knowing what drag is at that time. Mm-hmm. But like even the friends that I met, we didn't really have any concept of, you know, what drag is or what a drag queen is. But yeah, we would, you know, just play dress up at times, wear our mom's saris or suits or whatever.
How old were you now, Abhishek, when you were doing this?
So I think this was when I was in second standard, maybe.
Oh, wow,
second, third
really?
Standard.
Wow.
As a child, I've always looked up to Madhuri.
Nice.
Whenever she come on TV, I would, you know, just be dancing in front of her. And, you know, find lehengas from my maybe cousin sisters. And once even my mom's really good friend, she stitched a lehenga for me. And I would dance in my mama's shadis and all. Mm. So while growing up, I would think about all these things.
Sure.
You know, is it something new that has happened to me? Then I realized it was always there. You know, that, you know, something to wear, like a nice outfit, have a lovely hair,
sure,
put on like a lipstick or, you know, have like a nice makeup.
Sure.
So I think much later when I came to Bangalore, then going to Shamak for a 1 year professional course and coming back to Bangalore and I started working with Nitrutya. Mm. After my graduation in BCom from Chandigarh DAV College, I did my MBA in Bangalore and I worked for 2 years in an IT company. Then I quit and went to Mumbai to do the 1 year course of dancing with Shamak.
Mm. There were no questions asked. Abhishek, you've been the proper good boy. You have done the education. You have now done IT company. Mein tum kaam kar rahe ho. Why are you leaving and doing this and all that? Did that not happen?
Yeah, I mean, of course there were questions, but they also knew that how much I loved dancing.
Sure.
You know, and back in the day, since we didn't have much exposure and much opportunities in making a career out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always a good option to have some educational background. So even if, you know, there is nothing,
you can fall back on something. Yeah.
But thankfully, things kind of fell in place.
Sure.
Like after a long break of me dancing in Choli ke piche as right. as a child in Lehenga right. Choli, to, you know, I like there was no fear to be judged or anything.
Did you feel relief?
A lot, yeah. So then, you know, I started watching different videos, and then I wanted to dance in heels, and I wanted to learn exotic dancing, pole dancing, you know, all of that. And
suddenly the floodgates opened.
Yeah, I'm like, I need to do this.
Sure.
So that's when I decided that all of that I can't be in India and learn. You know, I need to go to the place where that's the culture, that's the lifestyle.
Sure.
So that's when I decided that I need to go to New York, and I stumbled upon Broadway Dance Center in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, you know, I ended up there. And that was just like opening a whole nother Pandora's box.
Mm.
So now the drag bit. So one of my whacking teachers.
So wait a minute. So by whacking, you mean it's a dance style, which is got like these striking arm movements and footwork.
Yep. So her name is Princess Lockeru.
Okay.
So she told me one day, she's like, Abhishek, if you really want to understand whacking, go watch the drag queens.
Right.
I was like, do they whack? He's like, it's not about that. Just go watch them. You'll understand the way, like how the music is in sync with their bodies. That's what it's supposed to be. And at that time, this was before Bob did the RuPaul's Drag Race. Before she won the RuPaul's Drag Race. So then I went to see her show, like first time ever in my life. And after that, I literally went back to see her again and again for almost 1 year.
Oh,
one
wow.
Full year. Okay. Like every single Monday night, I would go and watch her show. And kid you not, there was not even a single second or a minute or microsecond that I would have got bored of her. Every single time I went there, I was screaming or laughing.
Yeah.
Because that one, so on point. Like, I was like, how the hell do you do that?
Yeah.
Like after a couple of months, like, she also got familiar with me because she was like, okay, this pitch is coming here every week. So one fine day, I gathered up the courage and I was like, I love you. I love the show. Right. And I just like, so damn good. So, you know, would you be my drag mother? Like, would you, teach me? I want to learn this. And she said, yes.
Nice.
It was like a straight up yes. And I was like, okay, wow. So she asked me to come over to her place. I think it was a Tuesday, and she had a show at the Industry Bar. So I go to her place, and it was such amazing. I would just see wigs everywhere and different outfits, and there's like a big mirror and lights and, you know, makeup.
Yeah, you're like a little kid in a candy store suddenly.
Exactly. Once the whole thing, you know, was put on and I was transformed, and I looked at myself and I was like, wow.
Nice.
Bitch, you really look good. Like, wow. And the music hit, and I could see the whole sea
nice.
Of people,
nice.
You know, screaming and just tipping. And I was like, wow.
Wow, that's the moment.
Yep. I was like, I can be me. I can literally be anything, you know, and I don't have to care about anybody's opinions.
Sure.
Or nobody can tell me that this is right or this is wrong or this is how you're supposed to do it. Bitch, no.
Nice.
And I think that's how I started. And, you know, I wasn't doing like drag full time because I was still working with dance companies and we were doing shows. But then I started going to some of the amateur nights. So that's another thing that Bob told me, you know, it was like, if you really want to, you know, do drag and, you know, keep practicing, just go to the amateur nights.
Yeah.
Because these amateur nights really help. And they're still helping a lot of queens to come up. So there are a lot of bars in New York that do amateur nights at different nights. And you get to live your life and you get to practice and you have like a platform. So, you know, like it's a complete win-win.
Correct.
So I would go there and people were living for it.
Hmm. What was it like for you when you kind of came back? Did you suddenly feel that, oh my God, all the fears are coming back because now I've got to go back to a particular, you know, again, back to a certain so-called orthodox conventional methodology, would I still be able to carry on with whatever I've been doing?
So in between when I came back.
Sure.
That's where I started teaching heels.
Nice.
I think I was the first boy to, you know, start teaching dancing in heels in India.
Nice.
So I taught few people in my home city, Chandigarh. I did a workshop in Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw the whole change. Like, the moment I was confident, you know, I was comfortable in my skin and I was confident in what I was doing, everything just started falling in place.
Mm.
And from back, like, 4 or 5 years back, when you know, everyone was just afraid to even come out in heels. And now I see there are so many, you know, boys, they're doing whacking, they're dancing in heels, they're teaching, you know, they're moving around. So that really feels nice. That really feels amazing.
Right. So you had come back for good?
So I was still, you know, kind of in search of something more. Okay, what else? Okay, dancing, I know. For how long, okay, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, I went back. After I met my Princess Lokaru, the vacuum teacher, she also introduced me to a wonderful Tyrone Proctor.
Hmm.
One of the OGs in backing. I don't know if you've heard about Soul Train.
Yes, I have.
Back in the days, it's... So he was one of the OG Soul Train dancers.
Hmm.
Through him, I learned a lot about our dancing history and, you know, the role people of color have in the entire art scene, you know, in the entire music and dancing scene in America. It's like everything comes from black people, like literally everything.
But you strike me as someone who comes across as you took a deep dive.
Yeah. I wanted to, you know, experience the originality from where it all started.
Right.
Not just like third person teaching something without any basic knowledge of why it started, what was the whole cause, and, you know, how, what are the feelings, what are the emotions, what is the culture, you know, why are there certain lingos or slangs,
right,
like slay and work and yes mama and yes queen and fears. All of this comes from the ballroom scene, you know, all of this comes from the gay black scene, you know. And I understood that once I went there.
Right.
How people over there grew up, what kind of moves they did, you know, the kind of swag they have. All of that comes into movement. The kind of gestures, or, you know, how you talk, or how you're with your friends, or, you know, whoever.
Sure.
All those movements come into dancing, all that swag, you know, come into dancing.
But obviously you went to learn dance. But as a beautiful, positive byproduct, drag changed everything in your life. Am I right or wrong? I mean...
Yeah, drag and the ballroom scene.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Combined both. And when people started voguing, oh my goodness.
Now, I want you to educate me on this. What is voguing?
So, you know, voguing is a dance form that came in around 80s.
Yeah.
You know, because voguing as a movement also has been derived from a lot of other movements like African martial arts and other African dance forms.
So is it like a freestyle dance form?
Yes. It started with something called as Old Way.
Mm-hmm.
So Old Way were all like very lines,
okay,
poses, lines like in a magazine.
Right.
And with that, like, they'll make movements. So they took few movements from certain folk dances, certain martial arts forms.
Sure.
And, you know, combined all of that into a whole movement set, which had poses and staccato movements. And usually it'll be on disco and house beats. So let's talk about the whole ballroom scene. Our mother, Crystal LaBeija, she was the one who started the entire ballroom scene, which has become such a amazing community and scene now. She was part of these pageants that used to happen, you know, in 70s, late 60s, 70s in New York City. And of course, at that time, racism was on another level. It still is. So, you know, people of color would never win. The judges would always be racist and everything. So this one particular competition, which is also a documentary now, it's called Queen 1969.
All right.
Where Crystal LaBeija is there, and, you know, they show the whole pageant, and where she does not win, and then she walks off the stage, and later she shades the winning queen down, you know, and it's and that whole thing has become very famous. That's the point where she decided, you know, that I will have something for my own people. And then she threw her first ball.
So wait a minute. Just for my knowledge, these houses were led by mothers and fathers who were the experienced members of the ballroom scene. Correct?
Yep. All these queens, you know, they would house these kids. Because back in those days, anybody who was, you know, gay or trans, or, you know,
were ostracized,
thrown out of their houses. Mm. So these queens gave them homes and, you know, gave them like a family. So that's where the whole house culture became prominent. It's very similar to our hijra culture over here, you know, because as soon as the child is born, you know, the community comes and takes them away. Or even later, when they find out or they understand, and then they're like, okay, no, like, you can't be with us, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So then they would literally, you know, give them housing. They would walk balls, they do the competitions, win trophies, cash prize. So the houses became like chosen family.
Sure.
They were aunts and uncles and sisters and sisters, and, you know, like an actual how like a family is. Like,
sure.
Back in the days, we could have, hey, grandpa or auntie, right, Egypt. Right. Or Father Freddy, or, you know, Mother La Beja. So we would talk like that to each other. It was like a family. It was a family. So people back then, that was the family, because their actual family threw them out. So these houses gave them a family, you know, where they could live, be loved, get education, you know, and live their dreams. And the ballroom scene became a safe space where they were taught that, honey,
yeah,
you can literally do anything
got it, in this world.
And if you can be this good inside the ballroom scene, you can definitely do wonders outside the ballroom scene, because you have it.
But did you feel when you came back from New York to suddenly you find yourself in Goa, which is fairly still liberal and all of that, but did you feel that you as a person were able to fill those gaps or maybe spread the word a lot better in Goa, bring in the house culture, all of those factors?
See, I don't know about the house culture right now, because when the house culture really began, people were really in need of families. You know, times are changing now. I mean, there are certain people. We still have people, you know, who have a hard time dealing with their families. So yes, some of this would really help us. But I think one of my main focuses is to really develop this community, you know, through ballroom, to get everybody under one roof. And I think the house culture will help in people understanding each other more, like warming up to each other, like really understand somebody as a person and not what their gender expression or sexuality, you know, is like, you know, biological, what they are.
Forget that,
like, to actually understand as a person. I'll give you an example. Like, I had a friend from Chennai when I was in New York. So we were in the same dance school, and one day he told me, he was like, he's like, bro, like, I was, you know, very homophobic before, and, you know, I just didn't understand anything. But like, after being friends with you and, you know, meeting you and, you know, having such a good time with you, like, I kind of like, I get it now. Like, you know, it's like any other thing. I was like, yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So that's where I feel that, you know, people are scared because our media has done such a fab job in shaming the community, like, you know, especially Bollywood. So yes, things, I think things have changed. I think, you know, there are, I think I've seen a couple of movies and stuff where are, you know, there are characters which are not just funny, they're actually characters who have feelings, and, you know, there are good stories around it. So things are definitely changing now.
Right. So having said that, Abhishek, I would like to conclude the show by knowing your thoughts on what does the future hold for drag in India.
Try and really understand, you know, it is an art form. It is a form of expression. And it's always been there. It just didn't have the name drag. For example, see Kathakali. It's done from head to the toe. It's a transformation. Sure. You know, so these concepts have always been there.
Sure.
As an art form, we have always, you know, performed. And yes, drag has a bloody good future. It's a bright future. Like, it's always been there with us. So I'm to now waiting for the next level. Like, I know the queens are going to bring it.
Nice.
But yes, we definitely need a lot many amateur nights in different cities where new and upcoming and amateur queens can really get a chance to, you know, express themselves, practice, and, you know, just become better and better. And, you know, queens who've really reached somewhere, or, you know, who've really improved themselves, and, you know, who are really good. I encourage all of us to, you know, help the other budding queens, like how we were helped, like how, you know, Bob helped me, how somebody helped another queen, you know. So it's our responsibility as well to, you know, help people, give them support on their way, you know, in their journeys. So there is nothing to be scared. I know it's a very general human tendency that, you know, humans are scared of something that they don't understand.
Correct.
Or that they don't know.
Sure. So how can one be more helpful with the way they show support?
Keep an open mind, like see things as they really are. You can always understand. You can always take an effort to, you know, speak to a person and, like, you know, what are your pronouns? I don't want to be, you know, disrespectful.
Correct.
Or, you know, it's what I feel. I don't know much, but, you know, like, you know, I'm open to it, or, you know, whatever. And just be willing to understand, because just the way you've been brought up, it doesn't mean the other person have been brought up the same way.
Absolutely.
There are people who've never felt that they are born in a right body, you know, who've always felt out of place, and they've always been hammered to behave in a certain way, and they are tired of it. They don't want to anymore. They want to express as how they actually feel. So I think it's very important for us to let people express themselves. So I think my message would definitely be this, to, you know, like, just have an open mind, you know, see the person as a person and not what you see superficially with your eyes, without even, you know, understanding somebody or talking to somebody and the kind of life they've lived.
Well, Abhishek, it was honestly a true pleasure having you on the show. And you definitely have given us a whole new chapter as far as our drag story is concerned. And I wish you all the best. And I'm wishing that this movement keeps flourishing and carries on to celebrate a lot of beautiful lives and beautiful things. So, yeah.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me and having this conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. So, people, with that, we come to the end of another episode of In Drag. But worry not, because here's a tiny peek at what's in the next episode with Hiten Noonwal.
A lot of my characters are very dark characters because they are born out of humiliation and inequality, disrespect, and a lot of things that you would not see as positivity.
Sure.
I also want to tell that these characters are not negative characters or villains. These are so much like goddess Kalima, who is dark in the approach and the outlook, but they fight for the positivity.
This was a Turtle on a Hammock Films original podcast, hosted by Sudhi Sachdev. Executive produced by Avinash Kumar Singh. Produced by Geeta Singh. Directed, mixed and engineered by Jigisha Patil. Art and publicity design by Pooja Ray. Guest recording studio, Studio Ra, Goa. Sound recording copyright 2023 by Turtle on a Hammock Films LLP. All rights reserved.